Happy Friday, everyone. I hope you're going to have a wonderful weekend, including time spent with your brothers and sisters in Christ at your home congregation. If you don't have one, get out there, find one. If you're actively looking right now and you're within driving distance of our church building at Elkhart East, we invite you to come and check us out as a potential place to call your church home. We're going to open back again to the book of Song of Solomon, or the Song of Songs. This is PG-13 material. I remind you that again, because these two lovers are being quite forward in how they feel toward each other, how they want to be married and intimate, and it becomes part of this opera that I think is celebrating love in the time of King Solomon. I remind you again, I do not believe this opera is about King Solomon. I actually think that the main characters are two people who work for King Solomon. One of his animal workers and one of his palace maids, and how they end up loving each other and sweet-talking each other, spending time on breaks from their normal work for King Solomon, being in each other's company, and it's moving quicker and quicker toward them becoming husband and wife, I think, in our story here. So currently, we are hearing him sing to her. So we're in chapter 4, verse number 9. "You have captivated my heart, my sister, my bride." So the word bride is coming up here with the sense, I think, of him wanting to be his bride. The word sister is much more generic in the sense of a woman, a young woman of his acquaintance, not related to him in that sense, but more generic in its application. So, "You've captivated my heart, my sister, my bride. You've captivated my heart with one glance of your eyes." He's been talking about how beautiful her eyes are, like little doves just above her veil, right? And with one jewel of your necklace. We've talked about the jewelry that she's wearing. He said it's like a Tower of David with all these shields on it. And so she's wearing that, and he compliments her on her her jewelry. "How beautiful is your love, my sister, my bride. How much better is your love than wine." Now, when we saw that earlier, she was singing about it, and it was in reference to his kisses. And so I think that's probably true here, is that he's talking about kissing as well. So they have been sharing some special embraces together. "The fragrance of your oils are better than any spice." So she's wearing perfume. That's been commented on quite a bit by both her and him. "Your lips drip nectar, my bride. Honey and milk are under your tongue." So nectar, very sweet. Honey, sweet. Milk, refreshing. So basically he's trying to think of all the things that goes into his mouth that excites his taste buds, that excites the pleasure centers of his oral cavity. He's basically saying, "You and your kisses are the best things to experience. The fragrance of your garments is like the fragrance of Lebanon." One of the chief things that Lebanon is known for is the cedars of Lebanon. And if you ever walk through a cedar forest, you know that smell, that scent. I grew up in southern Missouri. We have a lot of cedar trees. They're not big cedar trees like the cedars of Lebanon. But I loved going out through the portions of the family farm that had lots of cedars and you know, knock the limbs aside and rub on the bark and just have that great smell. We actually use cedars as our Christmas trees each year. And that smell was just something special in my youth. And so I can very much relate to this, is that he says, you smell like the forests of Lebanon. Verse 12, a garden locked is my sister, my bride, a spring locked, a fountain sealed. Now, I believe this verse indicates that even though they have been doing some kissing, they have not crossed any sexual lines. That she is still a virgin, and I believe so is he, and that he is commenting on this fact that there is still something special yet to come in the future. She is like a locked away garden, a locked away spring waiting to be experienced in full once the key has been given to the person legitimately. That's my opinion of what verse 12 is trying to communicate here. And it kind of goes along with the idea of not awaking love before its time that we've seen a couple of times already. Don't rush it. Wait. Maybe this is a good place where I can say to our younger people, you need to remain chaste or pure or a virgin until you get married, till you make that lifelong commitment to your husband or your wife. Don't cross the lines into sexual intimacy until you've made that commitment. There is something special about that that you should not allow to be taken away from the two of you to enjoy for the first time as man and wife, okay? Verse number 13, your shoots are an orchard of pomegranates with all the choicest fruits, henna with nard. All of this is a reference to smells and tastes, okay, which are part of the experience between a man and a woman, between these two in our opera. Nard and saffron, calamus and cinnamon, with all trees of frankincense, myrrh and aloes, with all choice spices. A garden fountain, a well of living water, and flowing streams from Lebanon. Now, he keeps mentioning Lebanon, which I shared with you last time. I think it's possible that his home area may be up in the north part of Israel proper, which would border on Lebanon, and that he may have, in fact, been personally intimate with the Lebanon region. And so that he's speaking from his own experience here, and even about the streams that flow from the Lebanon mountains. And actually, the upper Jordan, one of its sources, flows downward from the Lebanon mountain region. So he says, you're like all of these wonderful smells, these tastes. You are like a well of living water. You're like a flowing stream out of the Lebanon mountains. You're locked up right now to me, but there is something special coming. Awake, O north wind, and come, O south wind. Blow upon my garden and let its spices flow. Now, English Standard Version places that as the last line in his song. But I am wondering whether or not it might be the first line of her next song, because he just described her as garden and how he was looking forward to a time when she would no longer be locked up and he could enjoy her fully. And so I think that she may actually be the one responding in verse 16, and I'm going to present it that way right now. So I think she begins singing, "Awake, O north wind, come, O south wind, blow upon my garden and let its spices flow." So she is anticipating. Then it goes on with, "Let my beloved come to his garden and eat its choicest fruit." So she's looking forward to this ultimate intimacy between the two of them once they get married. Chapter 5, verse 1. "I come to my garden, my sister, my bride." This is him singing. "I gathered my myrrh with my spice. I ate my honeycomb with my honey. I drank my wine with my milk." So is it possible that now we're actually seeing them get married and enjoying each other's company fully and completely with all the intimacies of marriage? Maybe. Or is this still more of that anticipation of what it's going to be like? And so I'm of two minds on that, because there's something that comes up next that seems almost like they're still not married in this next part of the opera. But the chorus comes back to him and says, "Eat, friends, drink, be drunk with love." And it's possible that this is a mixed chorus, both men and women, because I've suggested to you that we've had women's chorus, men's chorus, both. It's possible that both choruses now join together to sing to the couple, eat, friends, drink, be drunk with love, enjoy each other's company, basically. All right, now, we go back to her singing. And you remember we had a dream earlier, a dream sequence that she sang her way through, where she couldn't find him, was looking for him all over the place. Well, she has another dream sequence. This one's a little bit more scary. This one ends up not simply being anxious that she can't find him, but anxious that maybe he has run away. So let's see what she sings in this dream sequence. "I slept, but my heart was awake." So I was thinking. "A sound. My beloved is knocking." So in her dream sequence, she hears somebody knocking on the door. "Open to me, my sister, my love, my dove, my perfect one." So that's the way he's been talking to and about her, right? "For my head is wet with dew, my locks with the drops of the night." So apparently it's like in the wee hours of the morning, the dew has formed. He's been out and he's drenched in that dew. And then she, strangely in her dream, replies to him, "I put off my garment. How can I put it on? I've bathed my feet. How could I soil them?" So she basically says, "I've already gotten into bed. I've already taken off my day clothes. I've already bathed my feet. I can't come to the door and talk to you." Now, that's a weird thing for someone who has been singing about how much she loves him to respond to him knocking on the door in the middle of the night, right? And so some people have suggested it's possible this dream sequence is kind of intimating that they had a fight and that he's been out into the wee hours of the morning, upset about this fight, and he's now come back to seek her out to fix it, and she's still mad and won't come to the door. Maybe. That certainly would fit, wouldn't it? But then it says this. Remember, this is her singing again. "My beloved put his hand to the latch, and my heart was thrilled within me." So he grabs a hold of the door and rattles it to try to get in. It's locked. And so that gets her excited that maybe he does want to fix things. Maybe he does want to see me and talk. And so now it doesn't matter that she's, you know, in her nightgown. Doesn't matter that her feet are already clean for her to be in bed. So I arose to open to my beloved, and my hands dripped with myrrh, my fingers with liquid myrrh on the handles of the bolt. Now that's interesting that she describes how her hands were almost like liquid trying to open these things. So maybe she was fumbling with it a little bit, but there's also scent involved in that, a very pleasant scent. So maybe that's also intimating this idea that she's all excited again to think about him being there. But verse 6 says, I opened to my beloved, but my beloved had turned and gone. So when she wouldn't open the door and he rattled the door and couldn't get in, before she could get there and fumble with the lock mechanism and get it open, he was gone. He'd given up and gone away. So my soul failed me when he spoke. So I blew it. I messed it up when he came to talk to me and I rebuffed him. That's what this line seems to indicate. And so she goes out looking for him. I sought him, but found him not. I called him, but he gave no answer. So she goes out, apparently in her night clothes, and she starts yelling for him. Where are you? Come back! Right? But he's gone. She can't find him. Remember the watchmen from the earlier dream sequence? They're back in this one, but this time they're rougher. The watchmen found me as they went about in the city, and they beat me. They bruised me. They took away my veil, those watchmen of the walls. So in her dream, which is apparently a bad dream, she believes that when she comes on the city watch, instead of helping her, they beat her up. They abuse her. So that's how very, very messed up she is in her thinking right now. She's very upset. And then we have her sing this. I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, that you tell him I'm sick with love. So she sings to the chorus, because that's who comes up next. If you find him, tell him I'm missing him, I love him. And they sing back to her, and I believe this is ladies. What is your beloved more than any other beloved, O most beautiful among women? What is your beloved more than any other beloved that you thus adjure us? So, what's the big deal with him? Tell us why he's so special to you. So there's a little bit of self-therapy that's going on here, I think, in our opera, where she apparently was mad at him, wouldn't get up. Then when she did get up, he was gone. She goes out looking for him, can't find him, gets beat up by the city watch. This is all in a big bad dream. And she says, if anybody finds him, tell him I love him. I'm sick with love for him. And they're like, why? Tell us why. Why is he so special that you would want us to pass that message on to him? Then she sings back, verse 10. My beloved is radiant and ruddy. Ruddy is the idea of red. When it appeared in our story about David, I told you I thought it had to do with red hair. Here, I think it has more to do with the fact that he's another one of those outside workers. So he is very, very tanned. He's very, very bronzed. Middle Eastern people, like the Israelis, are what we refer to as middle brown, olive-skinned. And when they get tanned, they just get more bronzy, more reddish toned, I suppose. And so that's what he looks like. And he is better looking than 10,000 guys. Then she says, his head is the finest gold. Now that's not color she's referencing. She's talking about value. His looks are amazing. His locks are wavy, and they're as black as a raven. So he has very black, wavy, or curly hair. His eyes are like doves beside streams of water. Now, he's used this to describe her eyes. They're like two doves. And I told you, in that context, I think they're just above her veil. They're the only real feature of her face that he can see. And they're probably flitting back and forth coyly like a dove does, a little bobbing back and forth. That's how he describes her eyes. I actually think when she describes his eyes, she actually is trying to describe that his eyes are the color of doves, meaning they are gray. Now, that's a very rare form or color of eye, but it actually does show up in the Middle East. I think it's less than 3% of the world population has this eye color. It's kind of a steel blue. It's a very, very pale blue. But listen to the rest of the description here. His eyes are like doves beside streams of water, bathed in milk. Now that's probably talking about the sclera, the white around the eyes, sitting beside a full pool. That's probably the iris. And so he's probably got these rare slate blue eyes that she just loves to look into. His cheeks are like beds of spices, mounds of sweet-smelling herbs. So this is a throwback to when she's up close and personal to him, kissing on him. She knows how he smells there in his face. She loves that. His lips are lilies dripping liquid myrrh. You know, she's been talking about his kisses quite a bit, and so she's back to that again. His arms are rods of gold set with jewels. So he's looking good. His body is polished ivory bedecked with sapphires. So she uses valuable language. But language that also talks of strength, I think. His legs are alabaster columns set on bases of gold. So he's a good-looking, well-put-together guy and very valuable to her. His appearance is like Lebanon, choice as the cedars. There's the Lebanon region mentioned again. The mountains of Lebanon, covered with the cedars of Lebanon. So he is strong and special to me. His mouth is most sweet, and he is altogether desirable. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. So the word is actually, for friend, is the word for very close companion. So it's another one of those words that would go with this idea of their intention to become a couple, to be married. Then we have the chorus sing back, and I think it's the ladies again. Where has your beloved gone, O most beautiful among women? Where has your beloved turned that we may seek him with you? And she sings back, my beloved has gone down to his garden, to the beds of spices, to graze in the gardens and to gather lilies. So probably some special place that she figures that he's at that is special to the two of them. And she finishes by saying, I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. He grazes among the lilies. So I think this is probably their special place that they meet on a regular basis to be together. Maybe it's the very place that they take breaks from taking care of Solomon's animals. Some commentators have suggested that this is very intimate language at this point, that this is a reference to lovemaking. Possibly, but again, I'm not sure we've gotten fully to the place where they are definitely married. And based on some other things we've already seen, I don't think that they would have crossed the intimacy line previous to them getting married. It wouldn't have made the opera appropriate for public consumption if they had done that. Verse 4, he now sings. Apparently, she finds him. And he sings, "You are beautiful as Tirzah, my love." Tirzah was a special city, a beautiful city north of Shechem. Lovely as Jerusalem. So he's comparing her to very well-appointed, adorned cities. Awesome as an army with banners. You know, something you can't take your eyes off. And then he says this, "Turn away your eyes from me, for they overwhelm me." So he says, you got to look away because I can't handle you gazing at me with those dove-like eyes. And then he goes back to her hair again. "Your hair is like a flock of goats leaping down the slopes of Gilead." So those black tresses hanging down from her head onto her shoulders. "Your teeth are like a flock of ewes that have all come up from the washing. All of them bear twins. Not one among them has lost its young." So there you are. You've got all your teeth, and they're very, very white. "Your cheeks are like halves of a pomegranate behind your veil." So very red. And then, this is where we have to close up. Verse 8, I think, helps us understand this is early in the kingdom of Solomon. There are 60 queens and 80 concubines and virgins without number. So mark your place in that verse right there. And I'll come back and we'll talk about it next time we get into God's Word.